Hadassah, and I'm so excited to welcome you to Real Woman, Real Torah, a project of Becheva Learning Center. We're here to offer you an authentic Torah learning experience, produced for woman, by woman. I hope you enjoy.
Thank you so much to Yitti and Liebel Ganevish for sponsoring today's episode in honor of Becheva Learning Center and all the great work that they do. We are so grateful for your support. Over the past 7 years since starting Becheva Learning Center, we've received so many questions from women like you about a woman's relationship with Torah study. For thousands of years, there weren't women learning Torah in any formal or rigorous way. What justifies this change? Gemara seems to be a controversial topic. What do the sources actually say about a woman learning Gemara? Is Torah learning the right thing for a woman to spend time and money on? Isn't Talmud Torah a man's mitzvah? Will learning halacha from the sources make women disrespectful of halacha? Is too much knowledge a dangerous thing? Should we be concerned that women are just trying to learn to make a statement and not doing it lishma? How does studying Torah fit into the traditional role of a Jewish woman as a keres habayis? We'll answer all of these questions and much more in this new podcast series exploring a woman's relationship with Talmud Torah. This series will be split into three segments. In the first, we'll explore the original sources in the Mishnah, Gemara, Rishayim, and Acharayim that address the topic of Talmud Torah for women. We'll hear from two knowledgeable Torah scholars who will give us a better understanding of the underlying halachic principles at play and the varying halachic opinions regarding how to apply those principles practically. Next, we'll look at the history of women's Torah study, focusing specifically on the revolution in girls' education that took place over the past century. We'll hear from two historians who specialize in the history of women's Torah education, who will give us a deeper understanding of the development of the Beis Yaakov movement in Europe and the Achos HaTamimim movement in Russia. Finally, we'll hear from three contemporary leaders and educators in the Jewish community who will share their perspectives on how to implement these ideas in our own communities, schools, and personal lives. I'm so excited for you to join us on this insightful and inspiring journey. In conjunction with this new series, we also developed a comprehensive source booklet that addresses the topic of women's Torah study from halachic, hashkafic, and historical perspectives. We put a lot of work into creating this booklet as a resource for anyone looking for a better understanding of this important topic. You can visit BechevaLearningCenter.com to enter your email to be the first to receive the source booklet when it's ready. And now for our first episode with Mrs. Lori Novick. I met Lori close to 3 years ago when she had just launched her new website, derechahad.org. Derechahad does amazing work giving women access to the original Torah sources that discuss halachas pertaining to women. Their site is entirely produced for women, by women, and the content available there is an invaluable resource. Lori and I spoke a lot about the work we both do in making Torah study available to women, and we've been dreaming about collaborating on a project ever since. It was a privilege to finally make that happen when I interviewed Lori for this series. In this episode, Lori lays the groundwork for understanding the underlying halachic principles behind the halachas of women's Talmud Torah. She answers important questions regarding what a woman's obligation in Torah study is, why there may be areas of Torah that are discouraged to learn, and how modern halachic authorities interpret those sources. Lori's vast knowledge of Torah and deep insight is awe-inspiring, and her approach to this topic is warm, thoughtful, and down-to-earth. I hope you enjoy. Okay, so let's begin. We're going to talk a little bit about women's Torah study, and there's really two main questions that come up when we talk about this. The first question is, do we have an obligation to study Torah? Is that a chiyuv that women have? And if they do, what is their chiyuv of studying Torah? And secondly, because there's many mitzvot which we are not necessarily obligated to do, but we are still allowed to do, right? You know, we fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah and shofar and lulav and many other things, even though we don't have a halachic obligation. So the question then becomes, even if we are not obligated, are we allowed to engage in it? So we're going to talk about some of the original sources for these conversations. So let's start first with a woman's obligation, right? Let's explore some of the original sources and obviously the psukim, the Mishnah, the Gemara, that talk about
whether or not a woman has an obligation to study Torah.
Fantastic. So first of all, I just want to clarify that when we talk about like an obligation to study Torah, there's a formal mitzvah called of Talmud Torah. But that's not, let's not fool ourselves that that's the whole picture of what studying Torah is, or living Torah is, or connecting to Torah is. I think that's very, very important before we even get into the halachic discussion about the specific mitzvah. And not only that, I'm actually going to start with the pasuk that almost complicates matters, because it's a pasuk that describes something that sounds like learning, even though it doesn't seem to really be in the classic halachic, the key halachic discussion of women learning Torah, at least not in the beginning of discussion. It kind of comes up at another stage. The pasuk is in Devarim, and it's about the mitzvah of Hakel, where we come together. We're obligated to come together as a people every 7 years at the end of the Shemitah year. So it's actually, in theory, it's sort of coming right up. The king would read from the Torah, and it says, "Hakel et ha'am ha'anashim ve'hanashim ve'hataf." Gather together the people, the men, the women, and the children. V'gercha shebisharecha, and the ger, the stranger who's in your gates. L'man yishmu u'l'man yilmedu, in order that they hear or understand, and in order that they learn. V'yiru et Hashem Elokecha, and fear the Lord. V'shamru la'asot kol divrei Torah la'azot, and that they should keep in order to do all the words of this Torah. So the reason why I'm bringing this mitzvah of Hakel is clearly including women in this moment of hearing the king read from the Torah, even though we're not talking here about the formal mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And I think it really helps make the point that whether or not women are obligated in the formal mitzvah of Talmud Torah, there are a lot of different ways in which we are connecting from or learning Torah, some of which can also be obligatory, like Hakel. But if we're talking about the formal mitzvah of learning Torah, that really gets started from a pasuk that you all pretty much know from the Shema. Limadtem otam et b'nechem ledaber bam. And teach your children. Well, I translate it as children, but the word b'neichem can sometimes mean children, it can sometimes mean sons, right? In Hebrew, the masculine plural can refer to a mixed group of people, or it can refer to an all-male group of people. And the Midrash Halacha, the Sifri, apparently has a tradition that this case refers to the male group of people. It says, "Limatem otam et b'neichem," and the drasha is "v'lav netechem," your sons and not your daughters. I.e., the formal mitzvah of teaching a child Torah would be on a son. Now, what the Talmud does with this is it says, "Oh, look at something interesting about the word limatem. You will teach." It says this word, the way it's spelled in the Torah, is missing the yud. So even though the word is limadtem, and we know that, someone who didn't have the tradition of how to read the Torah properly might think it said v'lamadtem. And we can learn something from the fact of how it's written. So what the Talmud winds up saying is, look, there are kind of three things going on. There's being involved in Talmud Torah in the sense that someone has to teach you. There's being involved in Talmud Torah in the sense of you need to learn for yourself. And there's being involved in Talmud Torah in the sense of you need to teach someone else. And the Talmud says the fact that the word limadtem is written like lamadtem, that the word teach here is written like the word learn, means that all three of these levels really go together. So in effect, what the Talmud winds up saying is, based on this drasha and the Midrash Halacha and also in the Talmud, based on this drasha, the Talmud winds up saying, look, women are not obligated in learning Torah. Parent is not obligated to teach a girl to learn Torah formally, and a mother is not obligated to teach her son to learn Torah or a daughter. So women wind up being outside of the obligatory circle of this mitzvah. Now, just an important point, and I have a feeling this is where you're going to go, saying that someone's exempt from something is not the same thing as saying they're prohibited from something.
Right. Okay, so let's go to that now. So we've established that just the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, like that strict obligation, which I like how you introduced this by saying that that's not the whole of what engaging in Torah study is about, right? There's just one, that's sort of one narrow aspect of it, which is fulfilling this halachic obligation of Talmud Torah. So women are not included in that obligation, right? So let's now talk about so then are they permitted to, right? If they're not, they're not part of that obligation, but again, like other mitzvot, which women do engage in, even though they aren't obligated, like other mitzvot, asti shazaman grama, you know, there's always a discussion, are women then allowed to or not allowed to engage in those mitzvot? So how would that apply with Talmud Torah specifically?
All right, great question. So there's a Mishnah, which is really interesting, in particular, because this Mishnah comes in the context of talking about the Sota. The Sota is the woman whose husband suspects her of adultery. I mean, it's really just a tragic story. It's to the extent that he's warned her in front of witnesses not to be secluded with someone, but she was. It's not easy. It's a not easy situation at all. But in this context, there's a Mishnah that says that, look, there's sometimes a woman might be sota, and after there's an ordeal in the Beit HaMikdash, and there's something sota drinks, the mei sota, and that will result in her death if she's in fact guilty, and she drinks it and she's in fact guilty. Now, the Mishnah says, look, sometimes a woman might drink this, and it could be a couple years, it could be time before the punishment's actually going to take effect, which is kind of interesting. And it's in particular interesting because you could say, well, that might affect someone's faith, right? Like if we have this divinely ordained ordeal in the Torah and it doesn't work instantly, like what's going on, right? What does it all mean? And the response in the Mishnah to that is really interesting. So Ben Azai says, Mikan, the Mishnah says, like, based on this, Ben Azai says, Chayav Adam Lelamed Bito Torah. Based on this, a father or a man must teach his daughter Torah, that if she winds up in this crazy sota situation, she's going to know that if she doesn't die immediately, it's not because she's not actually going to get punished, but it's because she did something wrong. Now, this is really, really hard to wrap one's mind, at least for me, because I would love it to say something like, well, from here we learn that a man has to teach his daughter Torah because that way she'll never become a sota. Like, that would be a really nice ending. So it's kind of surprising. Like, where is he going? Like, really? Like, also, like, wow, someone's actually saying that a woman would be that a father would be obligated to teach his daughter Torah. Like, that's amazing. By the way, I have to clarify something. He's not saying it would be on a Torah level. He's not disagreeing with that women are exempt on a Torah level from learning Torah. He's saying there would be some other level, like a rabbinic level of obligation for women to do this because it would be important. Now, one way to understand this, Mariva Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin suggested this understanding, I'm sure others have also, is that this is a really extreme situation. So what you could say is something like, well, like if even in this totally extreme situation, a father teaching his daughter Torah could be really significant, then like how much more so in normal situations? It's almost like this is your extreme case. Like you could picture Ben Azai saying, there is no scenario where it wouldn't be helpful for the daughter to have learned Torah. So that I prefer reading it that way, though of course you don't have to. But the bottom line is he is saying, look, a man is obligated to teach his daughter Torah. Rabbi Eliezer, though, disagrees with him. And he says, someone who teaches his daughter Torah is teaching her. Now, tiflut could mean like nonsense or even like lewdness, like something not sanua. It's not clear exactly what it means. And that's hard, right? It's also a funny statement because he doesn't say, like Ben Azai was talking in a very clear halachic language. He said, Hayav Adam Lelamed, a man is obligated to teach. But Rabbi Eliezer is not saying it's asur to teach. He just says, if you do, it's teaching her tiflut. And the Gemara then softens and says, it's like teaching her tiflut. And the question is like, where is that coming from? So the Gemara says, look, you know, when you know certain things, you can wind up being deceptive or something like that. It's also kind of hard to understand. Again, we like to believe that if a woman learns Torah, or if anyone learns Torah, it's ennobling, like it would be the opposite of tiflut. Something that's really interesting is there's the truth of the matter is that Rabbi Eliezer is quite the character. He comes up a lot in rabbinic literature. And some of the things that we know about Rabbi Eliezer is, number one, he's very passionate. Like the fact that he would put something in very extreme terms is not unusual for him. So that's number one. It's just important to know. But the second thing that's important to know about Rabbi Eliezer, he's super, super, super punctilious and careful about what it means for the transmission of Torah to happen. Like he's the kind of person, he says things like, you don't say anything you never heard from your Rebbe. that kind of thing. Like, he's very particular about the transmission chain of Torah. So it might be that it just, he felt like once the Torah exempts women, we can't, like, that's the official transmission chain. You know, there's nothing else to talk about. But it's really hard to know exactly what he means. And like I said, he doesn't say usher, but he's clearly very strongly disapproving. And then you have to say, like, what do you do with this? Now, there is a third position, interestingly enough. The Yerushalmi presents as a third position. It's the position of Elazar ben Azaria, and it actually connects back to what we were saying about Hakel. And he basically says that, look, he's talking about Hakel, and what happens is the Talmud Yerushalmi says this is a third position in the debate about teaching women Torah. And what he says about Hakel is, why are people coming to Hakel? He says, Anashim ba'im lilmod, men are coming to learn, because, right, there are different verbs in the verse. The men, the lilmod is for the men, and the lishmoa is for the women. Now, lishmoa can mean to hear, it can also mean to understand in biblical Hebrew. It's not clear for sure which one he means. And then for him, the kids are just coming to give reward to the people who bring them. But the point is that what the Yerushalmi does, at least, is it says, look, this is kind of like a middle position. He's not saying that it's obligatory, like 100% to teach all Torah, but there are these moments. He's recognizing that there are these moments where a woman would need to hear Torah. And then the question becomes, well, wait, so what would Rabbi Eliezer do with that? Like, could Rabbi Eliezer really have meant this in a blanket way? Or I think something else we should probably talk about, we can talk about it now if you want, is like, are there cases where really a woman does have to learn Torah? Like, for example, could Rabbi Eliezer really have meant that a woman shouldn't learn Hilchot Shabbos?
Right.
That seems hard to believe. Like, women are obligated in Hilchot Shabbos.
Right. Like, we know that there is an obligation to learn things that are relevant to them specifically. Well, I want to first ask you a question. Is this language, right, of like Ilum Lam de Tiflis, right? You said it was a very unusual way to express it. Like, do we see that anywhere else? Like, that way of speaking about something not as usher, but like it could have negative repercussions. Like, do we see that type of like language or like in other places in the Talmud or with other areas of halakha?
It can come up. Like, there's all kinds of stuff in the Talmud. I don't claim to know all of it backwards and forwards either. The question is, like, what really becomes relevant is what halachic weight is this given in the halachic discussion? Because there are strong statements made in the Talmud all the time. And the question is, are they being picked up as halacha? So the Rambam actually, like, if we want to get back to the real halachic discussion of this issue, so the Rambam says something really interesting. And it seems like he's poskening like Rabbi Eliezer. But he does something a little different, and it could be that he's influenced by Rav Elazar ben Azaria's more moderate position. I'm going to read the Rambam. It's probably the longest source that I want to read today, but it's so critical to this discussion that I want to read it inside, even though it's a little long. He says like this, Isha shelamda Torah yesh laschar. A woman who has learned Torah receives a reward. Let's stop there and just say, wow. That's a really interesting way to open up this halacha, given that we've seen so far has been like exemption and then debate, where the sides of the debate are really strong and the negative side is very strong. But he's starting off by saying that a woman who has learned Torah has reward. Wow. Now, if he says reward, what he's saying is there's a halachic value to what she's doing. There's a positive, like there's an objective positive. It's not just that she likes it. Right? There's a positive value to what she's doing. Aval eino kischar ha'ish, mipnei shelo nitzaveit. It's not the same as the man's reward exactly because she's not commanded in this. Okay? V'chol ha'oseh davar she'eino mitzuveh alav la'asoto, ein scharo kischar mitzuveh ve'oseh, ela pachot mimenu. It's less of a reward. Now, what that means experientially for someone is something else, right? So he's saying, look, it's not identical. You can't say a situation where you don't have a direct command is identical to a situation where you do have a direct command in terms of halachic reward. But of course, the question of like why we do mitzvot and what it means to do mitzvot and who can even begin to measure halachic reward to start with is, you know, those are big, big, big shilas. And I don't know how, I can just speak for myself as a woman, when I do a mitzvah, you know, that I'm not obligated in, but it's customary for women to do, my focus at the moment is not, oh, technically my reward is less than a man. I'm very focused on the fact that I have the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah. So anyway, but then he says something, and then he kind of like, it's like a step back. So far it sounds really like, wow, full speed ahead. Now, he didn't say chayav. This is also important. He didn't pick up Ben Azai. But he says, af al pi sheyesh la schar, sivu chachamim shelo yelamed adam et bito Torah. Even though she has a reward, our sages commanded that a man not teach his daughter Torah. Now, he uses stronger language than Rabbi Eliezer did, actually. Rabbi Eliezer said, kol hamelamed Torah. He said, you know, basically, you do this, this is what happens. He's saying, like, no, this is like, this was on some level commanded. Mipnei sherov hanashim ein datam mechuvanot litlamed. And he adds something. He adds a reason, a rationale, which is what we were really, we wanted more of a rationale for Rabbi Eliezer. He says, so he picks up Rabbi Eliezer, but he says the reason is because most women are not, their minds are not oriented towards learning. Elehen motziot divrei Torah ledivrei avai lefi aniyut datana. But rather, they're going to take Torah to the wrong place. It's going to become nonsense or something in accordance with the poverty of their intellects, which it's hard to read. It seems foreign. And at the same time, we, you know, in the Rambam's day, based on some level on education, we don't know how much women have the opportunity to have an education. If I can share a little story, I always think in this context about my great grandmother, who was a woman who had no formal education. And then, like, you know, the family, like, the legend is, like, she'd go to the supermarket, and she was, like, a calculator. Not the, it was the market in those days, before supermarkets. And she'd go to the market, she was, like, a calculator, you know? But she had never learned math, right? And you say to yourself, I can't even begin as a woman to understand, like, who I would have been or what I would have been without right. an education, like, how that would have formed. So, you know, it's not like women didn't have intellects, but in what ways would it have affected the kind of ways women would be thinking or presenting themselves? I don't even know.
When we have a question of, like, you know, is it wrong in describing nature or nurture? It's almost hard to differentiate between the two when, like, you know, women have no platform whatsoever to, like, develop their, you know, intellectual curiosity at all. It's almost like it's hard to, yeah, like you said, it's hard to imagine, like, what their, you know, ability to engage with intellectual study would have been, you know?
So here's the thing. If you look closely at the Rambam, this is why it's such a juicy Rambam to learn. He said, Rov Hanashim and Datam Mechuvanot Litlamed. He said, most women, their minds are not oriented to study. Even the Rambam, right? Even the Rambam, even in his context where this is not the norm, is aware of the possibility that there could be a woman whose mind would be oriented to study, which, by the way, it aligns really well with the Rambam's position in general, because Rambam is the big believer in Bechira Chofshit, is a big believer in human potential. And he also, according to the Rambam, women are commanded in a lot of mitzvot about emuna, which for him in particular, to really fulfill them properly requires a depth of philosophical understanding. So that wouldn't be fully coherent for the Rambam to hold that way as an ideal for a woman. You know, that wouldn't be possible if he didn't think it was possible for women to do that. So he's leaving this room. On the one hand, it's like kind of a rough analysis of the women of his day. And on the other hand, he's sort of leaving this room that something could be different in terms of what a woman would be interested in or capable of. And then he says, "Bamed avarim amurim," what are these things talking about? "B'Torah sheba'al peh," oral Torah. "Aval Torah shebichtav lo yelamed ota lechatchila." But written Torah, the father shouldn't, like, from the outset be teaching her. But if he teaches her, the whole worries of tiflut are not a problem. So effectively what he's done, and that's a really interesting distinction that he's drawing. Maybe it's building on Rav Elazar ben Azariah, saying that women are coming in Hakel, they're not going to do the depth of Yomadu, but they're going to do Yishma'u. There's going to be some understanding, but not depth of learning. Maybe that's the difference for him of Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh. It's hard to know, but it also sounds like he's limiting Rabbi Eliezer. Like he's saying, look, I'm putting Rabbi Eliezer here, but first of all, I'm starting by saying, look, if a woman does this on her own, she's got a reward, right? That's already leaving room potentially for a woman to study independently. Then he's saying that the rationale behind Rabbi Eliezer is not necessarily true for every woman. It's still on the books, but it's not necessarily true for every woman. He does use stronger language than Rabbi Eliezer. He uses the language of Tzivu Chachamim, but he didn't use the language of Aser. And then at the end, when he's talking back about the father, he's saying, and we can make a distinction between Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichtav. Maybe Rabbi Eliezer never had Torah Shebichtav in mind, is what it sounds like from the Rambam. That Rabbi Eliezer was not talking about all forms of Torah. He was talking about specific forms of Torah. And that actually, all of those little elements in the Rambam actually become critical elements in later halachic discussions, because the room that's found that, thank God, like, you know, Batsheva Learning Center is doing great work with this, with women learning Torah. A big part of that is also based on what the Rambam is laying out. Like, maybe, for example, maybe if it's not the father and his daughter, maybe there's a particular concern with the father and his daughter that he's gonna misunderstand her. That's one direction. Maybe independent study. Maybe women teaching women is also independent study. By the way, now with the internet and the amount of stuff that's available online, I mean, the potential for independent study is exponential. If that's really not an issue, then wow, right? And then also, like, the distinction between Torah Sheba Al Peh and Torah Sheba Bichtav is really intriguing, because then the question really becomes, well, what is that distinction? Like, where do you draw these lines? Like, you would, like, there's no way the Rambam, I'll give you an example. The Rambam wouldn't want a woman to misinterpret the pasuk about the obligation of a woman in learning Torah, right? But right, you can't interpret it correctly without
Torah Sheba Al Peh, right? What does it mean to say Torah Sheba Al Peh without Torah Sheba Al Peh, right?
Like, the idea here can't be, let's turn women into Torahites.
Right. Yeah, that's a beautiful way to put it. I have two comments on the Rambam. So first of all, you know, I think the Rambam has to say Rov Hanashim, because we know there are exceptions. I mean, from the times of the Gemara, right, there were exceptions, you know, a few exceptions of women who were learned. And I think the halachic authorities actually discussed that, right? Like, how do we explain that? There must be some, exceptions here. Then also, the fact that the Rambam starts with the idea of reward, meaning I think that's because that's sort of the direction the Gemara is going. Meaning, if I remember correctly, the conclusion the Gemara actually comes to is that this sota would, her, the reward for Torah study is what would delay her punishment, right? And that was sort of the basis for Eliezer's opinion was that we don't want her to use that as an excuse, right? So meaning we see already in the Gemara that, like, there's clearly, we believe that Torah study would give a reward, right? That's like, there's no question about that, right? Am I understanding it correctly?
One important way to understand is that the merit itself of the Torah study would delay the punishment. Absolutely. That's definitely a way to understand.
Right. Okay, so let's get into some more, flesh out some more of the things that you were discussing here. I think maybe we should get into what differentiates Torah Sheba Al Peh and Torah Sheba Al Peh, because I think that's a big sort of theme in terms of the way different communities today, right, might understand this prohibition and the way it might be applied and the way I'm sure some of the halakhic authorities interpret it. I think there's understanding across the board that there is some level of Torah study that women, should and can engage in, and some that they don't. And, like, how do we differentiate, right?
Yeah. So it actually, it's really not so simple. I mean, there are different attempts to try to explain what this means. Does this mean that it's, like, on the surface? Like, is the idea that Torah Sheba Bichtav you can learn kind of more superficially? And Torah Sheba Al Peh is by its nature always in more depth. And then the issue is that, like, well, she doesn't need to know, like, this, the Sefer Hasidim talks about this, like, the issue is Omek Talmud v'tameya mitzvot v'sodeya Torah. The depth of learning and the rationales for the mitzvot and the secrets of the Torah. That's what he thinks we're talking about as being off limits for a woman. So is it that? Is there some particular concern about the depth of the Meiri when he talks about it? He says a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Like, a woman who knows, like, a little too much might take it to a bad place. She'll be like, his image is, she's like a hollow bell that makes a loud noise. Ouch. But so maybe one of the concerns might have to do with depth. There's some interesting Torah about women's Bina Yetera and how that might line up with other ways of understanding and maybe something suitable to something else. But the trying to actually pick out, like, where we go with these distinctions, like, in practice, becomes much more relevant more recently, because it's more recently that really the idea of formal Talmud Torah for women becomes a much more pressing issue. And once it starts to receive rabbinic approbation, then you get things listed. So, I mean, on the one hand, look, let's say you have the Gra, when he writes a letter to his wife, one of the things he tells her is, like, she should be learning, like, Sifrei Musar. right? So on the one hand, you do have like this tradition that there are certain things that, that women would read. When the Chafetz Chaim comes out in support of Beis Yaakov, what he says is he talks about the things that women can learn. And he says, like he says, Mitzvah Rabba l'lamed otanu chumash v'gam neviim uktuvim u'musarei chazal. Kegon Masechet Avot v'sefer Menorat HaMaor. He says, it's a big mitzvah for women to learn Chumash, Navi, Ketuvim, i.e. Tanakh. So fine, that was covered in Teresh Bichtav. And Musarei Chazal. Okay, now that's interesting. The ethical messages of our sages. And then he lists in particular Masechet Avot, another and another work that's not our sages, it's later. It seems like he's open to like works of Hashkafa and Machshava. But then also, so you would say like, okay, but what about like a Agadta that would help you deepen your understanding? What about Perusha Mikra?
Does he mention anything about halacha?
Right. So halacha is, so I should get back. I should step back. So when it comes to halacha, we raised this issue before. So it's implausible the woman's not supposed to learn what she's supposed to do. But what the real issue comes down to in terms of a woman learning halacha is how. Okay, meaning, in theory, a woman could learn a lot of halacha. The Maharil says this. He says, look, the way a woman's supposed to learn halacha is by basically imitating her mom. By the way, there's a lot to that, right? There's a huge amount that we learn through imitation. And he's saying this from a point of deep respect for women's practical halachic knowledge and depth of emunah. Like from within that perspective, like if your mother does it like this, you can rely on her. That she's not making it up, that it's not just some like, you know, folk custom, but that it's really a solid thing that was passed through the generations. Like that's very real and very powerful. That's one perspective. But then back to Sefer Chassidim that I quoted before, and also you have an introduction to the Smak, the Sefer Mitzvot Katan. So there's the question about like, well, maybe there's room for other things. Like the introduction to the Smak, a student of Rikor Bey, he's one of the Tosfos, says, that the Smak katav lenashim mitzvot hanoagot lahem asev elav toilen a kriya v'tikduk bahen kasher yoyel esek atamud lanashim. He says the Smak, a Tosafist, again, we're going back to like 13th century. The Smak wrote his thing for women also so women could get the halacha that applies to women exactly right. Like that was a goal. And, you know, even today, this tension between what's in the books and what your family does, it's a big discussion, especially, I mean, zooming forward, I mean, past the Holocaust in particular, but not only, also Baruch Hashem, kibbutz galuyot in Israel for happy reasons, right? The idea that like Jewish family would stay in the same place for 500 years, the same general area for 500 years and have like one consistent minhag, it's getting harder to sustain and to find. You know, Baruch Hashem, some of us are zocha, we have families with more solid minhagim. But it's not as simple. But you had this, so it was widely acknowledged from a very early stage that Rabbi Eliezer couldn't possibly have meant that a woman is not supposed to learn halachas that apply to her. And the Ramah paskins this way. The Ramah says, Chayevet ha'isha l'umod dinim ha'sheichim le'isha. A woman is obligated to learn the halachas that are applicable to a woman. It's one of the things in Derecha, so it's a site that's written for women in conjunction, supervision, Talmidei Chachamim, but it's written for women by women. And one of the reasons I think why this has been something that we haven't gotten a lot of pushback for is because it's understood that women, it's a Ramah, right? Women are supposed to learn mitzvot that apply to women. Like that's a basic, it's understood.
That area of Torah, I think everyone agrees that that's not just permissible, but obligated for us to study. So it's an easy one, right?
Right. It's obligatory. On the other hand, and this is where things get tough, right? So what depth is appropriate or what manner is appropriate? So previously, the debate about doing it through imitation or through books was much stronger. But, you know, the Chafetz Chaim already, and he's not post-Shoah, but he's, you know, we are talking about World War One. That the beginning of those eras, a lot of displacements, etc. The Chafetz Chaim is saying, okay, we need to move towards formal study. And he says it explicitly. He says, you know, we can't rely just on that kind of transmission from mother to daughter anymore. It's not enough. Truth is, Rav Shamsham Rafal Hirsch in the 19th century already opens up a formal school for girls. He has parallel schools for boys and for girls. You know, this is before the Sarah Shiner or before the Chabad time, meaning things were happening. It was becoming understood that education was also going to have to be to some extent written for women. And halacha about women is clearly within those bounds. Musar is clearly within those bounds. Tanakh is clearly within those bounds. And then what becomes very complicated is understanding, first of all, well, what are the outer bounds of that? Like, can I learn a piece of Gemara? I can learn Gemara inside Rashi, but I can't learn it in the Gemara. It's very complicated.
Right. So what, yeah, can you explain that? Like, and there were some, you know, I think Gemara is a more controversial topic, let's say, right? Can we explore a little bit of that? Like, why is that more controversial than anything else, right? And I guess, what are the two sides of the discussion with Gemara specifically?
It's actually always more than two sides, which is a good thing. So, like, you have opinions. So, like, again, the Chafetz Chaim opens the door, but he lists like a few specific kinds of things, and he doesn't say clearly exactly what the boundary is, right? Ramosha Feinstein, obviously it's moving forward in time. Ramosha Feinstein, there's a tshuva he has to a woman who wanted to know about learning Mishnayos. And he really is not into, he says, Sarich lemon am mizev rak pirkei avot. Says better not Mishnayos and specifically Pirkei Avot, because that's going to affect your character. And then you have a whole school of Rabbanim who say, no, the Petach from the Rambam, independent study might be different. A woman who's not part of the Rove, like you were mentioning, you know, might be different. The Rove might be different. But you have illustrious figures like Mordechai Eliyahu, who basically say, no, it's open. You know, the door is open to more study of more areas. And then you have statements by people like Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik was very prominent. I know you're going to talk about the Rebbe separately later, so I don't want to go into great depth about the Rebbe. But Lubavitcher Rebbe is what's so extraordinary about the Rebbe and his position. It's different from the other positions, which are also wonderful. Look, the Chafetz Chaim, he comes in and he's willing to say things need to change. This is extremely important. This is the future of the Jewish people is at stake, and it depends on women learning Torah. That's an extraordinary, bold, and crucial message for the Jewish future. More recently, let's say Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, when he inaugurates the Gemara Shir at Stern, or when he founds the girls learning Talmud in Maimonides, he's coming from the perspective of educated women should be learning what educated men are. Others, let's say Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and we'll get into it more deeply later, is very concerned with the possibility that anyone who's learning Torah is going to learn it properly. Those are all great and important messages, and they're not the only great and important messages. So many Rabbanim have said supportive things about women learning Torah. What's special about the Rebbe is that beyond the sense of, oh, this is a response to the times, or even a sense of, oh, this is a response to the needs of women, he's saying something even like more global. He's saying, this is part of the divine plan. The fact that there's been a shift here is bringing us closer to Geula. And that's extremely important when you're learning Torah. At least for me, it's important learning Torah because all of these different messages matter. On some level, when I'm learning Torah, I'm in dialogue with Rabbi Eliezer. I want to be able to be sure that it's not tiflut. So all of that really matters. And at the same time, it's so inspiring to be learning Torah and to feel that there's this voice there that's saying, and it's not just good for the Jewish people, and it's not just good for you. This is a necessary step to bring us closer to Geula. Wow. So we have a lot of beautiful communities where women engage in a lot of different types of Torah. And that's fantastic. It's important, I think, for women to know what the boundaries are in their given community, and also to know that there are other communities that hold differently and that there's what to rely on, because different authorities have looked at things differently. Fundamentally, when the Chafetz Chaim gives his approval to the Beis Yaakov, he says, look, Eit Lasad Hashem Afero Torah Techa. It's a reading of a pasuk in Tehillim, drawing from a Gemara. He's saying, like, this is the time to do for God, and it's a time to do things differently. And that's great. But then there's also the sense of, what does it mean for you as a woman when you're learning? Or like this fundamental question of, what is the purpose of my learning? So everyone's going to agree that a woman's learning Torah should help her know how to keep mitzvahs. Everyone's in favor of that. there's going to be a disagreement about, well, how much do you really need to know to keep a mitzvah well? It's an interesting question. Depends on how you define keeping a mitzvah well, right? What if I keep it, but I can't connect to it because I haven't learned it deeply? Is that relevant? That's like a real question. Then there's going to be another, basically people are going to agree that women can learn Torah that's going to affect who we are and what we believe, right? So that's like, let's say why Pirkei Avot would be more comfortable for Rav Moshe than a lot of Masechtas of Mishnayos, right? Because we want Torah to ennoble us. We want it to develop our character. It's the opposite of Tiflis. It's saying nowadays it's not that women are either doing work around the house or taking care of things that need taking care of or learning Torah. It's that women are either learning Torah or they're reading a magazine online, you know, that's not so quality. Like the choice between that is a very different choice when you're thinking like what's really Tiflis? Wait, it's firmer for a woman to read an article about something trivial than for her to learn Torah content? That's hard. That's where we are now, which is a different situation. But what the Rebbe did is he said something else. He said, this is really great. This is not some regrettable thing that happened, that there's an erosion of prior Jewish society. Maybe that too, but there's something else that's happening here, and it's really great for you to be learning Torah. It kind of makes you think back to that first line of the Rambam where he talks about, you know, Yesh Leschar. It's not about the reward, but it means something when you're learning to know that someone with the stature of the Rebbe thinks that it's really great. There's some, for a lot of Rabbanim now still, and a lot of communities now still, there's a lot of questions, and it really is hard because, you know, learning Talmud in depth, the bar to be able to start understanding it, as you know well as an experienced teacher, is really high. It takes a lot of effort. And then also a lot of discussion, the Talmud is not just result-oriented. A lot of the discussion in the Talmud is process-oriented. And a lot of the Rishonim discussions, a lot of it can be academic and very technical. And there's a question that a lot of Rabbanim really ask, well, if given the history of this topic, is this the thing that's essential for women to learn? So, you know, it's not a crazy question and it doesn't attract everyone to learn it. And at the same time, there are Rabbanim who feel that, like, you know, let's say back to Rav Lichtenstein, he, at the one hand, he was sure that it's not for everybody. But on the other hand, he did feel, he wrote, I'll quote him, if Torah is to be taught to females at all, and be taught it must, certainly in our context, then it needs to be taught seriously to ensure that indeed Torah is understood and absorbed with the seriousness and with the earnestness, with the exhilaration and the excitement, the passion that is coming to it. Not only respect for Torah requires this of us, but respect for women as well. Respect for their abilities, their commitment, their potential. And that's a very, very big deal, because what he's saying, in effect, is some of these questions about depth of Torah Sheba'al Peh, if they're for everybody, they're good questions, right? It's not necessarily a one-size-fits-all policy here about what women should learn. And women make decisions all the time. Communities make decisions all the time. And at the same time, he says, look, if you're really going to be teaching or learning, it's Torah. We want to take it as seriously as possible. And if women have depth to bring to it and there's depth in Torah, we want women to connect to that depth if women are able to connect to that depth. And what I love about what he says is that, like, part of that is about, like, if you really have Kvod HaTorah, so you don't really, your ideal is not for someone to keep halacha just because they know the minimum of what they have to do. Like, if you really have Kvod HaTorah, you do have an ideal that someone would understand more. And that is special, hopefully not at the expense of Emunah Tmimah, but it's something that you would want. But then the other thing he says is also, look, it's connected to how we understand what women can do now, where women are now. Like, should it be that the place where I'm really putting my, when I have an intellectual passion that engages my soul, should that always by definition be in an area that's not Torah? Or can we say, wait a minute, you know, if the woman is capable of doing this in other areas, like, let's bring that to her Torah study too. Let's not, like, dafka keep the Torah study at, like, a certain very specific level.
Right, right. Okay, so the last topic I want to explore here is the concept of Birchas HaTorah, making a bracha on the Torah, which, right, we make in the morning. And at least some halakhic authorities maintain that women do make this bracha, despite not having the strict obligation of Talmud Torah. So I want to explore that a little bit because I feel like it's a really great way to tie together everything that we were saying, especially starting with the concept you started with, which is that, you know, there's sort of this you know, relationship to Torah outside of just that strict obligation of Talmud Torah. So can you explore that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins that women say Birchas Torah. But then the question is, like, what does he mean by that? What does he mean by that when he says women say Birchas Torah? Because, right, it's weird, right? So if women are exempt from Torah, how would you just say that women, like, it makes it sound like you have to say it. So actually, the Graz says no. When he says it, he means like the same way that a woman would say bracha on other mitzvahs that a woman might be exempt from, a woman says Birchas Torah. That's one possibility to understand him. Another possibility, the Ma'aril just takes it for granted that, well, look, women, for example, according to the Ma'aril, women are saying the Korban Tamid and the Korbanos every morning in Tefillah. Halavai all women would get to a point where we could all say Korbanos and Parshas Tamid in Tefillah every morning. But the truth of the matter is many of us do say, Psuke de Zimra, what have you. You're also supposed to ideally make Birchas Torah, right, before saying those kinds of things. That's what he says. He basically says, okay, so according to the Smak, who says women are obligated to learn mitzvot that apply to women, and given the fact that women are going to be saying Psukim in Tefillah, so clear, women are obligated. Women have to say Birkas Torah. Women are obligated in a certain type of Torah study. And women are going to be saying psukim in their tefillah, which is connected. It's a form of learning. Therefore, you know, we can say Shema, for example, right? Therefore, women should be saying Birkas Torah, obligation. And by the way, there's an important nafkamina between those two positions, because if you think that a woman is saying it voluntarily, then she can't discharge someone else's obligation. But who is obligated? But if you think that a woman is obligated, she could. But there's a third position that is, I think, what you're hinting at, which is which comes out of the Grizz, the Briskerov, which is just this beautiful idea. And he says that he says like this: the Birchas HaTorah, I'm reading, ain a bracha al kiyum a mitzvah shel Talmud Torah. Birkas HaTorah is not specifically about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Raktu din bifnei atzmo de Torah bai bracha. It's an independent halacha. The Torah requires a bracha. He quotes a Gemara that backs that up. Im kein ein zed din sheshayach la mitzvah klal. If so, Birkas HaTorah is not specifically about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Raktu Torah atzma tu'una bracha. Just the Torah itself requires a bracha. V'nashim turot rak me'a mitzvah shel Talmud Torah. Women are obligated just from the formal mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Avalei nan mufka'ot me'etzem ha'chetza shel Talmud Torah. But women are not thrown out of the picture when it comes to the fundamental entity, the halachic entity of learning Torah. We might be exempt from the mitzvah, but we're still in the parsh of learning Torah. V'limudam havei b'chlal Talmud Torah. And when a woman learns Torah, it is Talmud Torah. It's learning. Therefore, women should make a bracha when women learn. So what he's saying is exactly what we started with. He's saying, look, there's this formal mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Okay, women are exempt. But women are in the parsha of Talmud Torah all the time. And based on that, women need to say Birchas HaTorah. And that's real. So it's a beautiful idea to kind of pull things together.
You know, I never actually saw that quote from the Brisker Rev that you just read. I actually saw it, the Rebbe actually says something like this, where there's this very complex sikha where he analyzes the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, where there's two places where the Shulchan Aruch HaRav talks about women saying Birchas HaTorah and somewhere else where he talks about women's chiv and Talmud Torah, and there almost seems to be some contradictions there, and there's this very sort of intensive analysis of those two sources, and he sort of comes to this conclusion, the exact same idea, which is that there's the strict mitzvah of Talmud Torah, right, which is women don't have that obligation, but when it comes to Birchas Torah, that more relates to just that connection to Torah in general, which women have an equal connection as men do, and that's what Birchas HaTorah is about. I think it's just a really powerful just a way to frame this whole topic. Very cool. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on. This was really incredible. I loved hearing you. You shared a lot of insight that I think all of our listeners will will really enjoy. And yeah, again, just one more shout out for derechaha.org. If anybody's looking for more resources on, you know, halachas pertaining to women and understanding them really in the full depth that we've been talking about in this episode, then yeah, you could definitely use that as a resource. Thank you so much for joining us. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you very much.